Okay, hour number two. I'm glad you're along this Friday night. It is the 20th of September, the year 2013, and that'll be gone in about 6 weeks. Watch how fast the end of the year comes and goes. Zoom. We're already tumbling into fall. Summer went by in about, a month, it seemed like. Very, very fast. We're going to talk this hour about something that's very, very important for each and every one of you out there. As you know, and I've been saying this for over 20 years on the air, one of the primary reasons Americans become sick, suffer, and die prematurely is because they poison themselves and give themselves diseases by eating what the government commonly calls food. Most food is not. Most food is toxic. It's processed. It's full of chemicals. It's full of all sorts of things that the human body does not want, know what to do with, and often sequesters away in cells. And I'm talking about herbicides and pesticides. You don't even need to go to GMOs. But many times they'll take tumors from the human body, especially breast masses, and take them apart, study them, and they'll find all kinds of toxins that came from food. The body tries to concentrate them and wall them away so they no longer cause a problem. It can't get rid of them in all cases, so they end up causing tumors. Now, we're going to talk with a woman this hour, Victoria Butenko. She is probably the world's foremost preeminent authority on raw food. She is a raw food chef. She is a raw food wizard. And I remember years ago going to a certain health food store, and out in front of that health food store was a small table set up, and there was a very, very friendly woman standing behind it, smiling and talking about raw foods. And on the table were a number of things that you could sample. And I went up, and I had never really eaten. This had to be 15 years ago or longer. I hadn't really eaten much raw food before, and I sampled one. And I guess I owe her an apology because I hung around the table for about 20 minutes and I kept eating. You were only supposed to have one or two, but it was that good. And I remember leaving and feeling like I really hadn't eaten much. I didn't feel heavy. I didn't feel lethargic. I felt energized and light. And I said, this is something very, very interesting. And that really introduced me to the whole idea of raw food. And Victoria Butenko has a story about her family that is extraordinary and the work that she continues to do to try to wake people up to the fact that raw is life. Cooked food is dead. The vitality is gone. As you know, if you heat foods up to 110, 115 degrees, all the enzymes break down, they're destroyed, so that you're really not eating much of anything. And now with all the toxins and chemicals and other horrors they put in food, you're eating a death sentence in many ways. And you probably have seen the documentary about the guy who only ate fast food at McDonald's for a month, Super Size Me, and how it virtually nearly killed him. I wonder if he ever regained his full health. Hard to know. You look at people out and about, young people, the norm now is overweight, pushing on obese. Everybody's big. Everybody's overweight. And you got kids 12, 13, 14 whose arteries are already half occluded with plaque at that age. You're going to see a whole generation of young people in their 20s and 30s who have heart attacks, heart disease, coronary heart disease, and many other things, of course, as well. Cancer, you can go right on down the list. But enough of me talking. Let's welcome Victoria Butenko to the program. Hello, Victoria. Thanks so much for being here tonight.
Hello, Jeff. Thank you for a wonderful introduction. And I spent several hours on your website. What a great site. Wonderful information.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
I want to apologize. I just came from northeastern Siberia, where I spent a month speaking only Russian, and my English became a little rusty. So please forgive me.
English is charming. Don't
thank
worry.
Thank you so much. We were actually studying, and we found a cluster of centenarians in eastern Siberia, people who are over 100 years old.
Sure.
And we were researching what is the special about them. So sometime soon we will be publishing that information.
Yeah. Now, you don't remember me as the guy that was hanging around the table eating all of your food. I didn't eat all of it.
No, I don't remember.
But it was so good, I could not believe it. I said, you know, I like all people, it's not cooked. It couldn't possibly taste good. I didn't eat all that much, but I certainly had my share, and it was wonderful. I've never had anything that tasted better, and you were such a light of health and everything. I was amazed by what I was seeing. Can you tell us how this all began for you, Victoria Butenko? This is a very interesting story, folks.
Thank you. Next year, we will be celebrating 20 years since we became raw. And actually, in the last 5 years, we became 95% raw.
Mm-hmm.
And I have published a book called Raw and Beyond, where I explain why it is not good to be only fanatically 100% raw. And I think it's a good thing. So
That's a very interesting point. Now, for all of you listening, remember, this is not some cult kind of thing. This is based on science. It's very pragmatic. And you just heard a very interesting comment. You shouldn't eat 100% raw.
You can eat 100% raw for several months or several years. But I don't recommend to go forever because you do accumulate certain deficiencies after. I've been following fanatically raw food diet, and I hurt myself doing that because I was maybe too pride or wanted to be the best I can. Wanted to be perfect, and it was not a good thing. So now I'm more balanced.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah, but 20 years ago, we became very, very sick. It was it happened to us very soon after we immigrated to the United States. We immigrated in 1990, and in 1993, all four of us, except for my oldest son, who was living separately, and he didn't have any major illness. He actually got it later. But for my two younger children, my husband and I became very, very ill. My husband developed arrhythmia. He developed
Rickets.
Arthritis and hyperthyroidism.
Oh, arrhythmia? Okay.
No, I developed arrhythmia. He developed arthritis.
Okay.
And hyperthyroidism. And the doctor wanted to take his thyroid out.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes. And my daughter developed asthma and allergies. And my son developed diabetes. I don't know at this point whether it was type 1 or type 2. We were told it was type 1.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to go on insulin. And, it took me a lot of effort not to put him on insulin because it's like you must put him on insulin. Otherwise, we'll take him away from you. It's a crime. You don't like your child.
Child abuse, of course.
Yeah, child abuse. And so eventually we had to leave the place where we were living and we were traveling around for 2.5 years being homeless and unemployed just so we were not bothered because we went instead on a 100% raw food diet on January 21st, 1994 and all of our symptoms very quickly disappeared. We healed very well.
All of your symptoms, all of them went away.
Yes. Yes, including my son's diabetes. But I want to say that it was not only by diet. We also started to exercise vigorously.
Mm-hmm.
I read the book by Dr. Jillian Whitaker, who said that when somebody has diabetes, if they exercise, the muscles, the extremities produce additional insulin, which is equal to what's missing, and you don't need to do shots.
How interesting. Yeah.
Yes. And so my son was running 4 miles every day. At the age of 9, he started running 4 miles every day. And I was running with him because I realized he wouldn't do it on his own. And so he never went on insulin and he was able to stabilize his blood sugar. He's now 29 and he's completely healthy. He doesn't take any shots and he's very athletic. He's still running. He's now actually doing a documentary about athletes, the super marathoners.
Mm-hmm.
But it saved his life. So diet and exercise combination. And so then we started teaching classes, reading books, writing books. And since then, we published about 12 books. In addition, we published 5 health books for children and did lots of lectures. Our books have been translated into more than 40 languages over the world. And all three of us are writers, and we keep doing research and collecting more and more information. And I would like to mention, Jeff, if I may, that it's not today as much as the raw food diet that is the best. today we must watch the quality of food, because today even the raw food is sold of such a poor quality, especially in the United States. On my blog, I have published an article about the poor quality of produce in the United States.
Okay, Victoria, hold on right there. We have to pause for just a couple of minutes.
Sure.
We're going to take a break. We'll come right back. This is all fascinating. So even in the United States, and we just ran a story about how the USDA organic label cannot be trusted anymore. The mm-hmm. quality of food in this country, which was 30, 40 years ago quite good, has obviously deteriorated dramatically. Be right back with the remarkable Victoria Butenko in just a couple minutes. Okay, and we're back talking to, probably without question, the foremost authority on raw foods and what raw foods can do for you. Of course, you know, long ago, we ate raw foods. We have just been told that the quality of food overall in this country, even raw foods, is not what it used to be. Tell me more about that, Victoria. I'm very interested.
How I figured this out is by traveling in the United States, especially in the middle states such as Illinois, Nebraska, Michigan. And also when I published a children's book called Fruits I Love, there are some rhymes there about how wonderful and sweet is the kiwi, how wonderful and delicious is mango. And children started to get excited and they asked, Mommy, can I buy kiwi? Can I buy mango? And when I bought kiwi in the store, it was hard as a rock and sour as a lemon. And children were confused. They didn't understand. Was the book wrong?
Huh.
At the same time, if you go to Canada, even, for example, for BC, where I make my green smoothie, I conduct green smoothie retreats, I see that the quality of produce is much, much better. The fruit somehow is riper and
in
it's
Canada.
Sweeter. In Canada, huh. Which is when it's northern of United States. And
sure.
In United States, in most of the states, you cannot find, for example, ripe peach, ripe plum. I think American people even forgot how the ripe plum tastes and how it looks.
They don't have a clue. They don't know how. They don't even know what tomatoes are supposed to taste like.
Yes, and so the produce quality is very poor. Secondly, for example, let's take oil. Let's take sunflower oil.
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago, the sunflower oil was sold around the globe in bulk. And it was only good for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then it would get rancid, it will mm-hmm. have residue, and you have to throw it away and buy a new one.
Mm-hmm.
What happened now? Why we could it could sit on a shelf for 2 years
yes.
and it doesn't get well bad?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, well, as we know now, the food industry pulled omega-3 fatty acids from it chemically, and omega-3 is very essential for our health. And so now, without omega-3, it doesn't spoil. It could stay half for 2 years. But then we have the whole generation of children and young people who wear glasses, because without omega-3, we cannot have perfect vision.
Mm-hmm.
We develop obesity as a result of that. There is diabetes as a result of that, headaches, cancer. And if you think about, is food industry our friend, or are we cooperating with them, or are they cooperating with us, or are we at war with them?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked in Webster's Dictionary, and it looks like it really fits that we are at war with FDA and food industry, because they're trying to get money from us and give us as little as possible in return. And they try to manipulate with the food so that even the raw food that is supposed to be of superior quality is something that could be dangerous to eat, with so many perverted nutrients in it. We cannot get good oil. We cannot get good grain. The amount of gluten in grains is many times more than it used to be. 100 years ago, the wheat grain was contained only 2-3% of gluten. Today's grains in Northern America, both in Canada and USA, has 30-40-50% gluten, and so on and so on and so on. Not only they created the grain that has too much gluten in it, which is bad for us, but they started to manufacture powder, gluten powder, and they give it different names. For example, it has this name, plant-based protein. Wow, oh, that yeah. sounds so good.
Sure
but it's
does.
Nothing but gluten. Uh-huh. And many people don't know, for example, that gluten is added as a thickener in such things as ice creams, chocolates, yogurts, pickles, cold-cut meats, and you name it. In sausage, 40% is gluten. And sometimes it says, no GMO, no gluten product. And on the back of the book, I see content, and it says plant-based protein, which is gluten.
Gluten is making such a wave in this country. Many yes. restaurants now have gluten-free menus. Tell us a little bit more, Victoria, if you would, about gluten, what it is. And I read something a couple of years ago that something like 90% of the gluten used in the United States in food products is actually manufactured in China. Now, you think about that, and this was a true story.
Mm.
Why do the Chinese make gluten when we have an enormous wheat industry here?
Well, I believe that in China they make gluten out of soy. Because when in Russia, people are warned not to consume soy products because they have, and soy protein, because that's gluten. That's the source of gluten
I see.
In Asia.
Yeah,
but
so,
in the United States, I believe that most gluten comes from, it's manufactured in the United States or Canada. But it doesn't matter. It's really bad product. And you don't know it's in. Every sour cream has it. And when I go to the store and I look through in the health food store through the products, I see that so many of them have either MSG or gluten or aspartame or color enhancers that it's literally always
yeah.
nothing
yeah,
to eat.
The FD and C colors are toxic poisons.
Yes.
Red dye number 40 is a killer potentially. There was one scientist I read, he will not allow red dye number 40 to be in his laboratory at all. He's a food scientist. He says, I didn't want to touch it. I don't want it in my lab. Keep it away from me. It is terrible. Now, what you said is very interesting. I mentioned wheat as a source of gluten. You informed all of us that soy is a primary source of gluten
yes.
as well. Now, we
yes.
all know that soy is a lousy product to begin with. It's almost
yes.
all GMO. 95% of it's GMO here in the States. I don't know what it's like in China, but Monsanto is making sure that it gets spread all around the world. We do know that.
If you look at the history of soy, and the internet allows you to find out this fact very easily, soy was originally grown in China as a means to improve soil, to enrich content of nitrogen in the soil.
So they plowed it back into the ground.
Yes, and they didn't harvest it. It was just for the soil.
Uh-huh.
But then the poor people started to consume it and eat it as a food. It was okay. But then when they figured out that it's cheap to grow, it's easy to grow, and it's people love it, it has addictive taste, they developed soy with a higher content of gluten in it, and they started to promote it and manufacture and make certain goods from it, tofu, and in history, that's how we started to have soy products. And soy in all is just really not good food for us. It has not been historically used as food.
Right. I couldn't agree more. The other side of the coin that we need to look at is the deal the FDA made with the MSG industry. And what they did was the MSG people said, here we are, we got to make a deal. And the FDA ended up by saying, if you take 100% pure MSG and cut it by 2% with anything that we approve, you can name it whatever you want to name it. And so we have dozens and dozens and dozens of different names
yes.
for MSG, 98% pure MSG. Many times if you look at a package, read the label, you see natural flavors or natural flavorings, that's MSG. And if you just do a simple search for MSG Other Names, you'll find the list of all the names that MSG is hiding behind. It's a criminal enterprise. They don't care about our health at all. And you're correct. We are at war. We're fighting to preserve our life and our health and wellness from the government, the very government that is supposed to protect and guide us to better health and wellness.
Yes, and now I would like to start saying positive things.
Okay, well, after the break, we'll do that.
Okay.
Hold on. Take a break. Come right back with Victoria Butenko in just a couple minutes. Okay, welcome back. Talking to Victoria Butenko, and it's time for some good news. All right, Victoria, go ahead.
The good news is that we have a birthright to eat well, and nobody is yet pushing food down our throats. We still pay with our own money. We pick the food with our own hand, and we put it with our own hand into our own mouth voluntarily. But we are manipulated into making choices what to buy. And the food industry is very cleverly doing this. They could raise the price on organic food and make the non-organic cheaper to make it compelling for us to buy it.
Yep.
Many years ago, I read the book written by two Russian journalists who Joseph Stalin sent in 1935 to America. And they were traveling for 1 year over the States. And then they wrote a very funny, interesting historical descriptional book, the documentary book. And I'm very pleased to see that it's been translated last year in English under the name Road Trip in America. And in this book, for example, they explain how they were living in New York for 10 days, and they watched how there was a big plant where people were working, maybe thousands of workers. And every evening when they will leave the plant, they have choice either to go eat to home owned restaurant or buy a very pale pastry tasting unpleasant sandwich for 5 cents for a nickel. And there were, at that time in New York, there were lots of home owned tiny restaurants. So the food industry wanted to get them out of business. And so they started to offer the sandwiches out of machines. It was the beginning of fast food. And so majority of workers who were working so hard for their money were buying this nickel sandwiches instead of spending $1 in the restaurant. And within about a year, all of these restaurants went out of business. And as soon as the last restaurant was closed, they started to raise the price on the sandwiches. And within two generations, they became more expensive than that food that people used to have at the restaurant. And today, today's generation enjoys the sandwiches in our fast food restaurants that still taste kind of bad, but they enhanced, they colored, they toasted, they look better. But we forgot. Most of people forgot how the real food tastes. And only when you go abroad, you can sometimes taste some food that is made from scratch or when you make it at home. So the good news is that there is some source of the good, wholesome food still in nature, still in organic garden. For example, my family, we now rent in a house with a nice garden and the backyard where we grow wild edibles. We grow a big garden in our house that we rent in. We planted 40 fruit trees. And because we use fruit trees and because we use espalier technique, within 6 months, they begin to produce abundance of organically grown non-GMO fruit. So we already have an abundance, maybe 7 months out of the year, of peaches and grapes and pears and apples and you name it. And also lambsquarters and dandelions and lambsquarters is a name of the plant, and purslane and chickweed and stinging nettles. So this summer, I didn't go to the store. I was harvesting it all from my garden, and I know that it's not been manipulated. It was free food. And so the good news is that you can still grow. The land will produce, and this is a choice you have. So I think the more people would do it, the better would be for everybody, because then the food industry will be compelled to offer us something compatible, or
Right. The only way we can possibly do battle with them is with our purchasing power. They'll listen. They want to make money. If it's popular, they'll sell it. Doesn't matter what it is. They don't care. They do have an agenda, of course, and they're locked in with the pharmaceutical companies and the big, well, the corporations like DuPont, which make herbicides and pesticides. Did you know that the folks, and I know Victoria knows this, the average head of iceberg lettuce is sprayed between 12 and 14 times with herbicides and pesticides while it's growing in the fields before it even gets to you? Secondly, iceberg lettuce is essentially useless anyhow. The darker the green in the vegetable, the better it is for you. Spinach, kale, broccoli, any of those. Darker green, beet greens, wonderful.
Yes, and then they fumigate it with ethylene, so it lasts longer in the store.
Exactly, exactly. It's really a tragedy what California did to the almond industry.
Yeah.
They had these wonderful organic almonds, and they forced the same kind of protocols on the almond growers. They had to do one of three different things to preserve them and kill off bacteria, allegedly. They had to fumigate them. They had to, I forget what the other two were now, but they ruined them. So you can't really get truly organic almonds out of California anymore.
Yeah, well, it's still reversible in potentially in the future. And again, if you people, everybody who is listening, will try to do your best to learn about wild edibles, which is the source of untouched, unmanipulated food, the real source of true food. And if you go around to your neighborhood and ask if anybody has a plum tree or fig tree or apple tree, and you begin to grow something in your backyard, the better will be for all of us. That will be the way to get out of this crisis that we have in now with the quality of food. Now, how can you consume wild edibles? They could be sometimes harsh and bitter. For that reason, I have invented the thing that's called Green Smoothie. In 2004, I have created this drink. It's called Green Smoothie in my office. After a long research, I was researching chimpanzees because the chimpanzees share with humans 99.4% of the same sequences of genes. And I was wondering, what do they eat? Maybe our diet is supposed to be 99% similar. And I've discovered that 50% of their diet is fruit, volume-wise, and 45% of their diet are green leaves. And only 4, 5, 6% of it is like seeds, pith, bark, and insects. And so I started to think about what is our diet like, and I made the diagram. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% different from what chimpanzees eat. We, of course, most of our diet is carbohydrates, like potatoes, wheat, bread, you name it, corn, porridge, macaroni, and then lots of, too much of animal food, which is very badly processed, very toxic, and also root vegetables that chimpanzees do not consume ever, unless it's a drought or in captivation.
Uh-huh.
And the only greens we consume is just this wilted leaf of iceberg lettuce in our Subway sandwich. That's it.
Yeah, it's not even lettuce. It doesn't qualify.
Yes. And so I decided, how can we consume all this fruit and greens together? So I blended it with water, and it appeared to be so palatable, unbelievable. In this way, anybody could consume their greens, even children, even people who just like greens.
Yeah. All right, and hold on. Again, Victoria, we have to pause our last break. Please. Come right back. If you click on either Victoria's name or the data below her, you'll go to Amazon.com, and you'll see her book, Green for Life, the updated classic on green smoothie nutrition. It's all there, and this is an invaluable introduction and guide on how to get your body off the one-way path to destruction by eating meat, dairy, processed foods, and worse. Back in a minute. The updated classic on green smoothie nutrition by Victoria Butenko, B-O-U-T-E-N-K-O. And Victoria, can you share a couple of your favorite recipes from the Green for Life book? How simple is it to do?
It's very simple. It takes maybe 2-3 minutes, including cleaning. And I also want to say that I wrote green smoothies for toddlers and for 7-year-olds.
Oh, very good. Nice. Very good idea.
Who will take Barack Obama's and Vladimir Putin's place in 20, 30 years? Who will be voting for or against GMOs and food safety issues in the 200 care by an average child, 20,000 commercials? So I have written 5 children's books, but 2 of them are about green smoothies, and I've done a very good homework. I've had a contest for the best illustrator. I've written really nice story. I've tested it on children and teachers. They're award-winning books. One of them is called Green Smoothie Magic, and one of them is called I Love Greens. I recommend that everybody buy it for children, because we need to educate these children for how to eat healthy.
Well, the government's not going to do it. The schools aren't. The government's not going to do it. The schools are not going to do it.
No, but we depend on our children. We absolutely, it's in our best interest to educate our children in the correct way. And I guarantee that if the child is reading this book, they would want green smoothie. They would ask for it. And then it will be your job to find some greens and some really ripe organic fruit and prepare a nice sweet smoothie for them.
Right.
So how do you make green smoothie?
Uh-huh.
You have to put some creamy ripe fruit in it. For example, banana or mango or papaya.
Okay.
Because if you will just use grapes or pineapple or apple, it might become frothy and it will separate. It will not look good. There is soluble and insoluble fiber in nature, in food. And so you need to pick up specifically creamy fruit for the green smoothie. You can add apple, but you also have to have banana.
Mm-hmm.
For example, 1 bunch of spinach, 1 ripe banana, 1 medium-sized apple. You chop this all, put it in a blender, add 2 cups of water, blend it well. That's a green smoothie.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah,
blend
and there's a book, Green Smoothie Revolution, that has more than 100 different recipes. And there are free recipes on my rawfamily.com site.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, now the other question I have is, you said you do a little bit of not raw foods. Now,
yes.
Just a little bit of a hint about what you eat that's not raw.
I have found out that I was deficient in omega-3s because we almost don't have any source of omega-3s anymore in our diet. It's been taken away from us. For example, 40 years ago, the cows were eating grass, so the dairy food had omega-3s in it, the meat had omega-3s. The chickens were also on the grass. Now they're in cage, and they fed soy. So they don't have omega-3s. Eggs don't have omega-3s.
Uh-huh.
The oils don't have omega-3s. I already told you so. And so really all the sources of omega-3s have been taken away from us. And actually, over, we're supposed to have, for each one part of omega-3, we're supposed to have three parts of omega-6. And in America, people have 20 times more omega-6, and sometimes 40, sometimes up to 80% more omega-6s. Too much omega-6 causes inflammation, obesity, diabetes, and cancer. This could be an underlying reason for mass obesity in this country.
Sure.
And so when I figured this out, I made a calculation. I calculated with my own self the ratio of omega 6s to omega 3s in all different nuts, in many different foods, in vegetables and fruits. And I've discovered that, for example, almonds contain 2,000 times more omega 6 than omega 3.
Almonds?
Whoa.
Let me ask you a question then.
Yes.
Too many almonds are not good for you then.
It's not, well, a little bit of almonds when you have good balance, when you have omega-3s from different foods, from like, for example, oils, then it's fine. But if you don't have any source of omega-3s, but you eat almonds, then it's not good for you.
Okay, I have a question. You're familiar with Udo's Ultimate Oil Blend, right?
Yes, I am.
369.
Yes, but I don't think everybody could benefit from that.
Okay. I use that in my drink. I have a green drink, too. Mm-hmm. I also put a small handful of maybe 15 almonds in with that. So I use the 369 Udo's oil, basically flax, and I use the almonds. So I'm probably okay with balance, right?
I don't know. No, maybe not.
Uh-huh.
If you, there's one chapter in that book, Green for Life, that I updated recently. I added one chapter specifically about omega-3, omega-6s that I explained in a very simple language. If you read this and you see, you check every point, which foods you can get omega-3s from, or which foods you can reduce from omega. Receive omega-6s. If you, for example, have a balance, then you can eat some almonds. Then you could consume Udo's oil. But for a majority of people who have already 80% more omega-6s in their body, it won't work.
I understand.
They need to completely stop consuming omega-6 and increase omega-3s. And for this reason, I took all the nuts except the walnuts and chia seeds and hemp seeds and flax seeds. All of the nuts I removed from my diet.
Huh.
And the nuts used to be the source of calories for me.
Calories and protein,
because I need some calories, so I replaced them with some cooked food, because cooked vegetables have maybe 15% more calories in them than raw food.
What cooked foods? What kind?
And take a carrot, you eat it raw, it has five calories.
Okay.
You cook it, you have 20 calories.
All right.
Because the starch is because the sugar turns into starch. And it's more high calorie dense than sugar.
Okay.
So I added, I have one quart or 2 quarts of green smoothie for breakfast. Then I have a salad for lunch. And then for dinner, I have a big salad and maybe a slice of squash, steamed or baked.
Steaming, baking, all right, no fried foods.
No fried food. Fried has AGEs in that, and it's not good for you.
Now, the other thing is always, I try to make the point to people when I tell them I'm essentially vegan, they say, where do you get your protein? Where do you get all your, you've got to have protein, got to eat meat. And I ask them, I said, have you ever seen a cow? Have you ever seen a horse? Have you ever seen an elephant? And then they say, well, of course, what are you talking about? And I ask them, well, what do they eat? What do cows eat? What do horses eat? They eat green grass. They eat green things. It's all there. It's all there.
Yes.
Enormous amounts of calcium, minerals for skeletal growth, full range spectrum of nutrition can be found in most dark green leafy edible vegetables.
Yes. I agree. Most people could be predominantly vegan. I am strongly against any fanatical veganism.
I'm with you. I completely concur.
Because I've seen some unhealthy children who craved eggs and parents wouldn't give it to them because they told them it's not supposed to be this way.
I
want to be very careful and observant. And today there's some, I would say, fascist movement that they wouldn't allow you even to talk and discuss that. And I was teaching classes in some northern territories, for example, in Iceland. And people there, when they try to be vegan, they have to take so many supplements because they don't have ripe organic fruit there. It's all brought by the plane. Yes, we're supposed to be mostly predominantly vegans, I think. And some people, when they live in a, specifically in a very warm climate, they could be 100% vegan. But we don't want to be fanatically 100% vegan.
Okay, now you have no problem with eggs, organic, free range, occasionally.
I actually had to take them because my health started to deteriorate at a certain point in 2006, and I was diagnosed with the deficiency. For so many years, I didn't have, but I had B12 deficiency, I had omega-3 deficiency, and a couple more vitamin D deficiency.
Huh.
And my doctor said, either we put you in the hospital and we give you lots of shots, or you begin to eat eggs. Well, I didn't have time to choose. He said, as soon you will, you know, you'll have irreversible results, and it's really bad. But I didn't take a whole lot of them. I just went and found some people who grow organic chickens. I was very careful. I was thinking for a long time, what can I take? So I went and I picked it from hens that spent 100% of the time on the pasture.
Yeah, well, they do have.
I ate them raw. I consumed them raw.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
No worries of salmonella.
I'm not afraid of it. I have very strong immunity. And so I just consumed like maybe for 2 weeks, every other day, raw egg, especially raw yolk. And then my numbers started to improve. And now, for example, I don't even want eggs. But that happened. It's true. And I don't want to hide it.
That's
that when I announced about this on one interview, then I received some nasty emails saying, we're going to shred all your books now. We're going to delete it from our emails.
Yeah.
So I want people to be more opened to...
Yes, understand. How do you, Victoria, how do you prepare the eggs for eating? They're raw. How do you do it?
I just wash them and eat them without salt. Because I understand if you fry eggs, you can eat 10 every day. But if it's raw, you cannot overeat. You only eat as many as your body wants.
Well, so you put it in a glass and kind of drink it down?
No, I just kind of break it with a fork.
Oh, you just make a little yolk, bake the yolk up and mix it.
Yeah, and I eat it with a seaweed. You know, kelp prawns? So that's what I eat it with.
All right, well, you be careful about your seaweed. If it comes from Japan, don't eat it.
I understand. Yes.
Unless you're tough enough and you're not worried about radiation. Listen, this has been a wonderful hour, Victoria. I really thank you for being here, and I just congratulate you for setting so many people on the path to healthier lives. This is the biggest gift you can give to people, so thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I am so glad that you exist, and thank you for educating people in many different ways, and thank you for your website.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, good night. Victoria Butenko. All right, we'll pause and come right back with Hour 3. Right after this.